Hello and welcome to Ascend Radio. In today's episode, I am joined by Ronnie Hines, who recently moved on from her long-standing role as Director of Division of Professions and Occupations, or DPO, at Colorado's Department of Regulatory Agencies, or DORA. Here we talked about her work at DORA, regulatory collaboration, and her experience serving as President of the Council on Licensure Enforcement and Regulation. We also discussed the challenges and benefits of having a centralized regulatory umbrella agency, the benefits and opportunities of regulatory collaboration through CLEAR, the role regulators can play in alleviating labor shortages, and plenty more. Let's take a listen. I think one of the first areas I'd like to tackle is, you know, you yourself. For my benefit, for the benefit of our listening audience, can you tell me a little bit about how you got started on this path? Take us back to, you know, your bachelor's degree in philosophy, and maybe give us a mini guided tour of how you wound up as director of Colorado's Department of Regulatory Agencies.
Sure. It was not a direct path. So after I graduated with my bachelor's, I went to law school. I went to night school. And so when I graduated from law school, I did practice law for about 10 years, both in Colorado and in Texas. When I came back to Colorado from Texas, I practiced for a little bit. And then I found myself as a public servant in the Department of Regulatory Agencies. And I really was able to sort of work my way methodically through the division, not necessarily a guided tour, but sort of just ended up that way. So I came in doing contracts, exam contracts, wanted to do more. So I ended up doing communication and outreach. That definitely was not my background, but really enjoyed it. And it taught me to really engage with stakeholders and how important those relationships are to build. And then I was on senior management team, did a little bit more with continuing competency, and took a pause. And then I took a pause in the fact that I moved over to administering programs instead of just doing contracts. So I administered our 6 mental health boards for a couple of years, which was a really great experience working with the board members. 6 boards, 7 members a board, 42 board members is a lot to manage. Definitely saw some interesting issues there. And then ultimately oversaw all of our healthcare programs. So about 2/3 of the division, anything from the medical board to also the mental health boards, physical therapy, really a great experience, and found myself not just administering and overseeing the boards, but also engaging in policy work. So working in the, you know, to speak to the General Assembly about important policy issues, helping engage with stakeholders on important policy issues like the opioid crisis, making sure that we were doing the best we could with our boards to support providers. And I did that for a period of time. And then I was appointed to this role, the division director. So we are an umbrella agency, and so now I oversee more than 50 different programs, about 200 employees, and I've been in this role about 6 years. So the very short version of how I ended up here, but it was really just sort of methodical and gaining more experience and working diligently.
Before encountering the Department of Regulatory Agencies, is it fine if we call it DORA, or is that's what you guys call it? Okay, good. Not too cute, or no. You know, or I'm sure you've played off the DORA the Explorer kind of thing in the past.
That's where my kids used to think I worked.
So, what was your level of understanding of, you know, the world of regulation and even DORA and what it does before you arrived?
I think my understanding of DORA was probably, like many people, almost non-existent, right? Unless you're licensed by them. But as a licensed attorney, I had, you know, some understanding of regulation. So that would be my basis. I do have a lot of public servants in my family. So at least I had a fairly good understanding of government, but DORA was, you know, definitely unknown to me for the most part.
Well, I mean, for those that don't know, can you give us a bit of a background on Colorado's DORA? I mean, I've spoken with a lot of individual regulatory agencies that oversee fairly niche professions. DORA is much different and much bigger, from what I understand. Can you give us a little bit of a sense of what it is, what its mandate is?
Absolutely. So DORA has evolved over the years. Definitely the mission is consumer protection. We're here really to make sure not just that consumers are protected. However, we want to make sure that we're getting licensees into the workplace, but balancing that with consumer protection, of course. So DORA is actually the larger agency that houses the division that I oversee, which is DPO, the Division of Professions and Occupations. There are about 10 different divisions in DORA. So it ranges from real estate, which is a separate division, securities, the Public Utilities Commission, financial services, banking. So it really has a broad scope of regulation. We also house the Civil Rights Division. So the mandate, though, is the underlying mandate is still the same, right? It is still consumer protection overall. And so bringing that all under one house, I think, has really allowed us to leverage how we're able to do that, whether it's leveraging technology, leveraging resources among each other, but really making sure that we're serving the executive as an executive agency, serving the governor and serving the people of Colorado.
What sort of different challenges did you find as Deputy Director of Healthcare?
As Deputy Director of Healthcare, I think the challenges are really making sure that you have your voice out there, right? I think that twofold. I would say getting your voice out there, developing those relationships with stakeholders and making sure that they know what we're doing and that we're here to support them as licensees, but also trying to, the huge challenge is getting out to consumers, right? Making sure that they know we even exist so that if they have a complaint or a concern, that they know where to file it. So that is big challenge as far as licensees and consumers. I think the internal challenge is really making sure that we're doing things consistently. I think we've really strived to do things in a different way. Although we are in an umbrella agency, the boards still do their unique work. And so we have some centralized services, but the complaint processes had been different when I was the healthcare deputy. The work of the boards is very different, right? But the priorities are usually the same. You want to make sure that you're addressing high risk for the public, and you want to make sure that you're processing complaints consistent with the law and in a defensible way. But overall, I think the boards have done always a great job making sure that they're addressing concerns and being thoughtful. But it was a big role, and it was a very diverse role, ranging, like I said, both from the administrative internal aspect to the external aspect, where the legislative and policy work just touched so many different people across the state.
How do you go about identifying and measuring what those highest risk areas for the public are going to be?
So we rely on the underlying practice acts, right? I think that making sure that we enforce and comply with what those practice acts are. I think the highest risk to health and public safety are always our biggest concern. And that's how we really measure that.
What have you found over the years at DORA to be either constant or recurring themes, challenges throughout your time being there?
Themes and challenges, I think I would point to the one theme or biggest challenge is really just educating the consumers and finding ways to reach them. I do think that challenge is also just making sure, or a theme, making sure that we're educating licensees in a way that we can support them. So if there's a common violation, whether it's they're not keeping their information up to date or whatever that might be, making sure that we educate them so that we can help them prevent having a disciplinary issue in front of a board.
Right. So that awareness factor is really key. Would you say that a lot of people need to be made aware that these systems and processes are available to them and this is how to find them?
I think on the consumer side, that's very true. I think licensees obviously know where to find us, right? But I think making sure that they know what their requirements are is always an ongoing challenge. And so just making sure that we're transparent and that we're communicating as much as possible so that they're as informed as they can be.
Now, I'd be remiss to not point out that you also recently served a term as president of CLEAR. How would you describe your time in that role, and what kind of work did it involve?
Sure. So I've been a member of CLEAR for quite a long time. I've always valued the excitement of all the members of CLEAR, and I think that's why I wanted to serve in that role. I was my very first CLEAR conference after attending attorney conferences. It was a very different experience. And it was really exciting to me to see that everybody there was so engaged and so excited to be there and learn from each other. And so as president of CLEAR, obviously I oversaw the board and worked, you know, to make sure that the committees ran and we did the work of CLEAR and made sure that we had the annual education conference ready. But really my role as president was to, I think, a little bit to be an ambassador for CLEAR, really making sure that all new members found CLEAR, existing members stayed and really appreciated and contributed to what CLEAR had to offer. CLEAR is such a great organization to share information, allowing us to learn lessons from other regulators, to collaborate and really find ways to be innovative and share our best practices. And it's really provided a great asset to my role as the division director. I think I rely a lot on my fellow CLEAR members and on CLEAR as an organization. I always have the ability to tap into the resources offered there, always find new innovative policies that are happening by other members and to share that information, and really just to gain some confidence in how we manage as a state in our professional regulatory policy, wanting to make sure that we are able to get professionals to work without compromising health or safety. And everybody at CLEAR has that same goal, and to do that with integrity and in the best way that we can serve our licensees.
You mentioned lessons. I'm wondering if there are any big lessons you took away from your time at CLEAR.
I think my biggest lesson is that I always have more to learn. I think that Colorado does an amazing job. I think that we're, you know, a leader in the forefront of regulation. We definitely are a lighter touch state for regulation, but I am always amazed. And I think that's even more true as president, really seeing the dedication and how much that we're able, the dedication of other members and how much we're able to learn from each other every single day, but also how we often face the same issues. We face the same challenges, whether it's a workforce challenge or a policy challenge. Oftentimes we are facing the same thing and we're able to find solutions for our own states by collaborating with each other.
So at DORA and at CLEAR, you know, over the years you would have covered so many different licensed areas, so many different professions. So I'm wondering, how is regulating nurse licensure different from, say, you know, a podiatrist or a private investigator? You know, and I bring that up because I find that, you know, a lot of licensed professions and those regulators associated with them do esteem and think of themselves as unique, and they are indeed. But when it comes to interagency connection, collaboration, and then finding, you know, systemic replicable processes that can go across all these different professions that, like I say, are as varied as, you know, podiatrist and private investigator. Yeah, to that effect, how does the kind of regulating address, I guess, that vast, you know, complexity from profession to profession?
That's a great question. So I think that every profession is unique, right? And I think that fortunately, many of our programs do have boards, and so we're able to rely on expertise to show how unique that profession is, and that the regulation might be unique in a manner that we might not always appreciate it in the day-to-day practice of that profession, whether it's nursing, podiatry, massage therapy. So we rely definitely heavily on board members or experts, but I also think there are a lot of commonalities. And so one of the things that I've done as the division director is really to try to find more of those commonalities. We've had a centralized licensing team for years and years that was that predated me in this role. So we're able to have a very systemic process unique to the qualifications that are required, but still the same process for online licensing applications. But one of the things that I focused on was where can we leverage the similarities and not negate where they are unique. And so one of those places that I did that was how we handled complaints. And so where each board had previously handled their own complaints, I developed a centralized complaint intake team. And so the best part of that was really to find ways, not just to find ways to do it faster, but to find a way to do it more consistently, to make sure that we were really thinking about how to reduce the time for a complaint, for a respondent to receive that notification, and really to make sure also that the complainant had a faster resolution. And we were able to use some technology to move that through. As we move to a new platform, we really want to reduce the duplication of efforts. We want to improve our tracking, and we want to make sure that cases are heard. Before that team, like I said, each of the 50 program areas had their own process. There were inconsistencies in the complaint process. Complaints might be sent for investigation or sent to boards in different ways. It could take up to 10 days, if not longer. And this team really has exceeded my expectations. So when we receive over 6,000 cases a year, they took the 10 days down to 1.5 days. Wow. And they continue to do that, which is an amazing feat, right? And it not just reduces efforts or reduces the duplication of efforts, but it allows the same team to really focus on what case might be a priority, what case might need to be addressed more quickly. Mm-hmm. And it, in fact, it was one of our division's wildly important goals. It's continued as one of those goals. We want to make sure that we're really reducing the life of a whole case, a complaint. And we've been able to do that as well, and reduced it from 100 days down to 70 days. So really thinking about how we can do it better, but also how we can protect consumers more effectively and more timely, or give licensees a resolution more timely.
So what about on the flip side of it? What are the arguments, I guess, either for decentralization, not that you necessarily want to advocate that, or what are the drawbacks or challenges of that centralized model?
I do think that obviously we had a little bit of resistance when we centralized the intake team among not all boards, but I do think we had to engage the boards on why we were doing it, and still let them know that they had their autonomy. If they needed more information or they needed an investigation, they still had the autonomy to do that. This was just the front end processing of that. I do think that's been a huge benefit, but I think that's the balance, right? Is that we have the boards still have their autonomy, but we're able to centralize certain functions. For a long time, the division has had centralized investigations as well. So a very small team of investigators actually investigates for all 50 programs, and the boards are familiar with that. They see the work of that. So having those communications and being transparent with them, and definitely reinforcing that they had their autonomy, was a really important aspect of that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Can you tell me about the ways in which you might work with your peers from other states?
Sure. So I think the primary way that I work with my peers in other states is through CLEAR. I think that knowing who to reach out to, knowing particularly who the other umbrella agencies are, and if you need a resource or have a question, I think even if they're not an umbrella agency and you just have a specific question on a particular program or board, you definitely are able to reach out. If you don't know somebody, Claire will direct you to somebody. And so that's always been a really great benefit of Claire. But also just the fact that being involved in Claire for so long, I do know many of my counterparts, and we often do collaborate, whether it's just to pick up the phone and ask a question or an email, and making sure that we're taking advantage of how we might best address a problem, because most often my peers have faced the same problem.
Colorado is obviously a great example of the kind of interagency collaboration that I think is very sensible and ought to be pursued by other states. Can you name any other shiny examples that you've seen across the union? Any other states that you've seen where you're like, these people, they're on a good path and they're doing good things in the world of regulation?
Not to put me on the spot, right? I really we rely on our neighbor state, Utah, as an umbrella agency. They're formed very similar to us. Always admire them. I have a good relationship with the director in Vermont. They're much smaller, but they've done some innovative work. So those would be the two states. Definitely Utah, though. I think that it. I mean, some states only have an umbrella over health care. But even with that, it's still a huge benefit. Definitely work with Alaska a little bit for the healthcare piece. But I do think there are states everywhere that are doing such great work. It's hard to just name one or two.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And
Yeah.
sorry for putting you on the spot there.
That's okay.
I want to talk a little bit about labor shortages because we do a weekly, regulatory news magazine called Ascend, and we're combing the headlines in and around regulation licensing every week, and routinely see headlines about labor shortages from state to state in particular. Now, I know some of this was contributed to by the pandemic, some maybe a lot, depending on the area of licensure, but it really seems to be a perennial issue. So, what can you say about labor shortages and the role that regulatory agencies play in either defeating or contributing to those shortages?
Sure. I think one of my colleagues actually had an interesting lens on this, that the regulator isn't necessarily going to fix labor shortages, but we maybe are an influencer and a convener of the conversation. But I do think that there are ways that we can contribute to helping address the shortages across state lines in particular. We have seen compacts expand, which improve mobility. I think that we have thought about, especially during the pandemic, how we might bring additional workforce in. You don't necessarily want to reduce licensing requirements, but you want to be thoughtful about whether they're appropriate. We are have a sharp focus, recognizing that it's not just a state issue, a local issue, it's an international issue, right, that everyone is talking about. And so finding ways, Colorado has done a few things to find ways to help with labor shortages. And so we've worked with the military community. We definitely have focused on making sure that we have pathways that might help a veteran come out of the military and maybe not start from scratch, right? So a policy that they might be able to just take some classes and take the exam. We've seen particular success with this in our nursing program, where we might see someone have their military experience evaluated and just be able to test to be a CNA or an LPN, and successfully so, which is amazing. We even won a governor's award for that, and that's called our VOCAL program. It's the Veterans Occupational Credentialing and Licensing Program. The other thing that we've seen in that space is recently there was a bill passed that we supported where we were able to give military spouses the ability, if they had a license in another state, to come in and have a license for 3 years for free. So that, contributing to the workforce, making sure we're supporting where we can. The other work that Colorado and I think many states are doing is really focusing on the rehabilitated community. So we see trainings in different correctional facilities. We see the rehabilitated workforce getting trained as they come out and making sure that they have a pathway to licensure. So we definitely have focused on that collateral consequence piece. And I think that's a huge piece for workforce. It definitely supports it and brings it around. And then the last piece that I would really want to focus on, where a regulator might have the ability to influence workforce, is looking at internationally trained folks. Obviously, there's a challenge if it's a displaced refugee, they might not be able to demonstrate their qualifications. But we do have a role there, and we've done some work even with our medical board to make sure internationally trained medical folks can get a license, and we're continuing to do that work. We're analyzing profession by profession to see where we might influence that and continue to expand that workforce.
I mentioned the pandemic, and I don't think we could have a conversation on licensing in 2022 without discussing COVID-19. What can you tell us about the good, the bad, and the ugly of getting all of these agencies digital to begin with, back in 2020 when the pandemic arose? What were some of your biggest challenges or successes then?
So we've had this conversation a lot. If this pandemic had happened any earlier, we would have probably been in a different place. And I'm not sure exactly. I'm sure other states faced different challenges. Fortunately, we were already online. Our complaints were online, our licenses were online, our applications were online. So we were in a really different place where we were able to still be very accessible to the public from the technology standpoint. So that was a great place to be, right? And then we were able to move our workforce home remotely very quickly. So we really had a continuity of service that I think was a challenge that other states faced that we didn't face in the same way. That said, like obviously we had to pivot how we do work. We've always been a very office-oriented agency. And so our staff has done a great job pivoting there. But I think that for the most part, we had been able to just pivot to doing the work at home because we were still very accessible. But that
Right.
said, I think that there were still challenges. I think that we obviously faced workforce as a challenge and making sure we kept that pipeline going as exam vendors shut down and testing facilities shut down and schools shut down. And so how do you best support that? So we did the best that we could and found temporary solutions during the pandemic.
In terms of long-term resilience, what have you seen in terms of agencies and other agencies implementing new technologies and processes?
That's a great question. I think that to start, that our division, our agency, demonstrated amazing resilience during the pandemic and continues to do that. But I think in an ongoing way, I think we're going to see agencies continue to prove their ability to be nimble and innovative and pivot just to make sure that we're continuing the work. But I think for future, public emergencies, we have new processes. I think that where we probably struggled the most was where current law prevented us from doing some of the things that we needed to do. So obviously, we would see executive orders address some of those issues so that we could work a little bit more nimbly and address the pandemic, whether it was issuing temporary licenses or expanding scope where appropriate. But really finding ways to do that and just to make sure that training was possible remotely. But definitely, as we move forward, I think we've had a lot of lessons learned to do a better job with foresighting our resourcing and thinking about where we might need to rely on technology in a different way. Whether that's, allowing more telehealth, whether that's proctoring exams remotely, training remotely, and really just finding ways to use technology in ways that we might not have been as open to, I think, in the past.
Right. I guess, I mean, you kind of answered my question, my next question there, but I was going to ask about how we improve the resilience of regulatory agencies for future public health emergencies. So I'm wondering if you have anything to add there, any thoughts?
I think we improve it, but I think that in the past we had emergency plans that were probably pretty localized in that process. I think the emergency planning and the long-term planning continues. We're definitely seeing like that emergency long-term core work of how do we get these emergency healthcare workers into a core group so we can access them faster. So I think there's a lot of work still to be done, but I think it's in place. It's happening now, right? The planning now for the larger scale pandemic that we just experienced, if we should ever experience one again, those emergency plans will be more scaled to size, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, we've got to get our lessons learned from what we all just went through and are going through, right? In addition to the labor shortages coming up all the time, we also see a lot of news about, unsurprisingly to you, I'm sure, regulatory reform and interstate compacts and universal licensing. And now I'm assuming some gears of regulatory reform along the way wound up in, you know, DORA becoming what it is. But I'm just wondering what your, and again, I know state to state, it's such a patchwork of different regulatory structures. But I'm just wondering, I guess, broadly, what your thoughts are on regulatory form, the need for it, you know, the talk of universal licensing. Any thoughts there?
I think that Colorado constantly looks at probably at regulatory reform a little bit differently. I think we're always very open to finding ways to streamline. I don't really have thoughts on universal licensure per se, but I do think that we focus on mobility. We've always had a version of endorsement or allowing for mobility that was very quick. We did, although the same bill that I mentioned for military spouses, that bill focused, it's called the Occupational Credentialing Licensing Program. So it was focused on reducing as many barriers as we could to improve mobility. And I think a lot of states are looking at that and how similar our licensing requirements are and being able to make sure that we just allow people to move from state to state. I think that's the intent of compacts, right? On licensing, on compacts, one of the interesting thing in mobility is thinking about we want to make mobility easy, but it also makes workforce to leave your state just as easily, right? And so I think I had never thought of it quite that way. Obviously, we want mobility and to be able to do that. But I think also thinking about telehealth, right, like might be expanded in the fact that maybe then we're able to serve other states, but keep the workforce we need in our own state as well. So I think that's something to think about.
What about educational requirements? You know, they're set, and then I think different states, different provinces up here in Canada have different approaches. Different professions, obviously, have different approaches to making sure that they're fresh and relevant and applicable. How do you address the whole world of educational requirements, and are they relevant, and are they effective, and are they of the times?
That's a great question. So interestingly, I think that our education requirements are focused on being for minimum barrier to entry, right, where they can still be, where they're still competent, but it's not the gold standard, it's the minimum barrier to entry. And I do think that our legislature looks at that whenever they look at our practice acts through the sunset process. But I agree, they should be looked at, right? I think they need to stay relevant. And I think for many professions, they are the same across states, but not all professions, I agree. And that's sort of where the challenges can arise for mobility and transferability.
So I want to get to some bigger, broader ideas and questions in terms of regulatory challenges. What do you think is the biggest or are the biggest regulatory challenges facing states, shall we say, today?
I do think that one of the biggest challenges is which professions get regulated, right? I think we see more and more professions that maybe don't necessarily need formal regulation. I think if you, Colorado definitely has the focus of minimum regulation. And so if you don't need that burden to practice, but you can still make sure that they're safe to practice, I think there are professions that we have suggested not to regulate. But often the profession wants regulation. And so that for Colorado, that's a challenge. I don't think that all states have that same lens, but we definitely looked at that through Sunrise processes and whether regulation is needed or appropriate. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that I would probably identify.
Are there any, be it in Colorado or elsewhere, is there any legislation, pending legislation or top issues that you've been keeping a close eye on?
So our legislative session is about to start next month. So we actually haven't seen that much. We have a number of sunset bills that will go through, which is that's not my division, but it is housed in DORA, where the review of the existing profession is undertaken to determine whether there needs to be some change to policy or whether continued regulation is appropriate. But I haven't actually heard anything too exciting. We have seen there was a Sunrise for home health providers. So providers that provide care for their own families and whether they would be regulated even though they're reimbursed right now.
Just off the back of that, and I want to touch on the political dimension. And, you know, I get, you know, we all want to be, you know, sensitive around that to an extent. But, you know, I like to think that standing buildings and, you know, successful open heart surgeries are like nonpartisan. You know, it's good these things are licensed, right? We can all agree on that. I'm wondering over the years, how maybe the challenges you've encountered or how it might be challenging to navigate, you know, the changing of guards, as it were, when, you know, a new party or a new appointee comes in. How is that? How have you navigated that?
I think that Colorado is in a really great spot because of our Sunrise process. So even though you might see a changing of the guard, so to speak, the department does a great job, and I think the administration, whatever party, always has done a great job of really educating the General Assembly of what that looks like and why regulation may or may not be appropriate. So there's clear criteria in the statute that the evaluation undergoes of why regulation might be important or appropriate. So maybe a little bit less of a challenge just because we have the Sunrise process.
Before we wrap up, I just want to speak more about the vision of like the future of regulation. I mean, we still see some states, some provinces using pen and paper, some are databases, and then others on the complete other side of the spectrum who have realized complete digital transformation across their licensing programs. And then we see interstate compacts that we've discussed. We see incremental and sometimes sudden reform. And, you know, surely as states align a little bit more on technology mandates, we'll see more maturity. But, you know, also linked to that, regulatory processes vary and, you know, they're really transformed by technology. And then adding one other dimension to it is like, you know, we have an aging workforce, we have a young emerging workforce, and, you know, we have, you know, an interesting political dynamic in the country, shall we say. When you look 10 to 15 years ahead and think about the regulatory function as it ought to be, what do you see? Like, what does that vision look like? And how do you think we'd get there?
I think that that's a great question. And I think that we will see some facing of the same issues we have today, right? I think regulators will continue to have to engage in workforce discussions. Mobility will likely still be an issue. But just, I think to your point, finding ways to improve the utilization of technology, not just for regulation, but how people access care. I think the broad and universal view is people's relationship with technology will just deepen. Everybody will come to rely more and more on digital connections. And I think that's a necessity, right? I think it's going to be a necessity for how states might share information to make sure that they're protecting consumers across state lines. I think we definitely could see using technology in different ways, even for transferable license, whether that's Bitcoin, blockchain, that would allow for, I think very few regulators have engaged in that conversation in a practical way, but making it really easy to have an enforceable document that is tracked and timestamped and really could think about how we could use that across state lines. The other thing that we've talked a lot about is what, whether it's an algorithm, decision making, or emerging AI, really thinking about how that might inform, could licensing decisions become automated in some respect? Obviously, I think that we're going to see certain professions at least really want to maintain their autonomy in that decision making. But I also think the other piece for the next 10 to 15 years will be seeing the results of some of the work agencies are doing now around DEI and making sure that we're focusing on partnerships like with CLEAR to support that innovation and how it can inform decisions and regulation as well. So I really think it's in some ways going to be the same, but in some ways, I just think that deepened reliance on technology will be definitely there.
And finally, before we wrap up, what keeps you up at night these days?
Well, the impending legislative session probably keeps me up at night. But I think just making sure that we're doing the best job that we can really does keep me up at night. I want to make sure that we do our best job to protect consumers. And that's always kept me up at night, but it's also what keeps me coming back to the job every day. I think it's such an important job, and I'm really proud of the work that we've done. But also in supporting our licensees. We have great licensees who are educated and well-informed and well-intentioned, and making sure that we have them in the workplace is just so important. So I think there are a lot of things that keep me up at night, but mostly I think it's just making sure that we're doing the best we can for the state.
Well, that's great. We'll definitely be keeping a close eye on it because Colorado's definitely setting a very exciting model for what other states could be, not to make it competitive or anything. So thank you so much for joining us and thanks for sharing your thoughts today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you would like to learn more about regulatory licensing architecture, collaboration, and approaches, subscribe to Ascend Magazine, where we have plenty of content on all of these matters. And critically, sign up for our Week in Brief newsletter for a quick weekly rundown of all that is going on in the world of regulation, licensing, and digital government. You'll find the links in the show description. Till next time, stay informed and stay safe.